hopefully leaders, if you haven't learned it yet, to realize one size doesn't fit all. And right now you need to spend the time, even though it might feel complicated, to figure out what really works for each group of people that you employ.
Hi, and welcome to the Leadership Now series with Nick Vujicic and Christine Grimm, Aria Consulting, 23 years of executive coaching, and I'm humbled that she is my coach. I could not lead without the sound coaching from Christine. I'm so glad, Chris, that we get to coach everyone watching. Tell us what we're going to be experiencing here on this series.
Yeah, we're going to coach you around leadership, around real challenges, how to navigate the challenges that you have right now, and how to feel good about it.
I'm so excited, Chris. You're going to be sharing with us also your pool of CEOs that can bring in and chime in some principles from their experience as well. Thank you for joining us here on the Leadership Now series. Here's today's episode.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Leadership Now series. I am Nick Vujicic, the host and our co-host here for this beautiful weekly series, Christine Grimm from Aria Consulting. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Nick.
Love you, Chris. I'm so excited to get into this week's podcast. For those of you who are joining us for the very first time on these Wednesdays, whether you're watching or listening all around the world in or outside of America, we are trying to bring, in fact, especially in on this episode, Chris, when we're talking about global management for CEOs, whether you're a leader of a small, medium, or large company, or maybe you're not a CEO or managerial director at all, there are leadership values and principles that we always unpack on a weekly basis, talking about 2020 being the year of reset. Where are we? And every week, Chris and I are learning. We have our own network of people all around the world. Chris, you consult CEOs all around the world, and even up to Fortune 50 companies. And the latest and greatest, what's on the forefront of really leading a corporate on a global market. How do we really lead our teams that are struggling right now with directors not being able to travel from country to country? Right. And then also us knowing like how much of a bubble we in the West are in when it comes to the latest reports, and forgetting that it's not about just us or just America. Mm-hmm. It's understanding the value of understanding the global perspective of all of this. Welcome to this podcast. If this is your first time, make sure you share it, like it. Chris, let's dive in right now, straight into it. First of all, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Happy Camo Friday. It's Friday when we're recording this, and it's summer here in the US. And I think that it's perfect timing for us to expand. We've been doing, this is our 10th episode, I believe.
And, high five.
But we haven't really talked about what it means to be a leader of a team that goes outside the boundaries of just the U.S. And I feel like it's more than time to do that. And it really is a Leadership Now issue. Leaders are having to do something very different than they've never done before. And I started thinking about it, Nick, and thought, wow, there's a lot to cover here, because with not just travel limitation, but also because the pandemic is global that we're dealing with at this moment, regardless of when you watch this, by the way, I think the leadership lesson is going to be timeless, because what it has done, obviously, has stopped everyone in their tracks. They're having to think about policy in a different way. Right? Like, how do we take care of all of our people, regardless of where they live? And of course, different countries have different ways of addressing whatever issues are taking place. So whether that be, you know, racism and social unrest that for many people, they might not realize that outside the US, you know, the topic is being discussed not just in our country. The pandemic is not just in our country. If you don't know that, we're going to invite you today to expand your understanding. So the leaders of organizations, whether they're a US-based business or whether they're based in another country, but it's impacted by the US, you know, this is a global conversation. And I know, you, Nick, you know that because you actually have team members outside the U.S. and you're not from the U.S. originally. So you tend to be more aware and sensitive to these issues than a lot of our leaders might. So I thought, yeah, let's talk about this. What does it mean to be cultural, have cultural understanding beyond the obvious, you know, and I'll pass it to you in a second. But I think that what is I'm seeing happen is more and more leaders are starting to understand, specifically people who are now remote and everybody's using Zoom and WebEx, et cetera. So they're on more conference calls and more video calls. They're saying, oh, wow, it's harder to schedule these than I thought when I've got people in all these different time zones. Or, you know, wow, we are establishing policy, for instance, around like coming back to work after COVID and going through the really important conversation of who are our people, where are they, how is this impacting them, how do we make decisions that are fair and equitable for our entire population. So they're big leadership topics.
It's a lot.
And not easy, because there is no, like, there are some playbooks, but there are not 2020 playbooks yet. Right? Like, we're making it real time.
We're writing that right now, right? That's the interesting part about how unique all this is. Look, you know that I have 12 million Facebook fans and, I don't know, 1.6 million Instagram. And I did a real quick, an hour before we started recording, just a quick live to tell us kind of what's happening on a global scale from their point of view. Now, a lot of people on the Facebook that I have are not, you know, CEOs as much as people that are just, if you will, followers of a guy that they think is inspiring. And I'm so thankful. And hello to all the fans and followers out there. Love you. Mwah. Obviously, a lot of them are not the CEO. That, you know, we know the LinkedIn social media platform is more of the business centric, if you will. But I wanted to know, like, from the people following me on that account, like, how is it going where they're at? And a lot of people saying, love you, keep it up. They're encouraging us to continue to do what we're doing, Chris. They're all, you know, loving it. But, you know, they're saying, please pray for us, pray for our country. There are no jobs in my country. And they mentioned the country. There are a couple of people who were just really dealing with anxiety. Mm-hmm. That came up a lot. So within an hour, I got 1,700 comments that I basically went through maybe 400 of real quick with my toe and just trying to figure out, okay, what are people mostly saying? And a lot of it's just like, thank you and all that. But really, there were some deep ones that got into that. And I feel like in this big unpackage of what you just said, I'm sure a lot of CEOs are anxious, and it's almost like there are no parameters. Like, imagine just on that one thing that you just said as far as time zone. Now, I know what jet lag is. I know what time zones are. Tonight, I'm actually going to be doing a Zoom presentation in Singapore. And so you got to be flexible, but how flexible do you have to be? Probably most flexible out of the whole team. But it's almost like, yeah, you're doing a lot of calls and then they're sporadic. And then now you're bringing them in on the Saturdays and the Sundays, because Singapore's quite a lot ahead, you know, than the West Coast of America kind of thing. So talk about the culture and cadence. How is it set? Like, because there's no playbook or rule book, if you will, where does the CEO start with them? Is it just, well, I'm going to make up the rules? Or is it, you know, is it weekly meetings? What are you finding now on how does our own company's rule book start to get written, knowing more than any week before that you and I are almost certain that there is no barometer to say, oh yeah, we'll just go back to what we were pre-COVID. Like, that's even off the radar as far as we're concerned. Yeah. On the leadership and reality issue. Yeah. In our books for this context, absolutely. So what does the CEO do?
Yeah, I've got a few ideas here that come from real life. So first, I don't know if you know this, but early in my consulting career, 1,000 years ago.
No, whatever.
23, 25 years ago.
When you were 12, you started.
When I was 12.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. When I was 12, I did some projects for U.S. companies that were doing business abroad. And so I did a project in Asia that was headquartered out of Singapore. And then another one where I spent a significant amount of time in Heidelberg, Germany. And so those were like my first real understanding of what it was like to be outside the U.S., working for U.S. organizations and having to take what I always used to call the horrible times, 2 a.m., you know, 9 p.m., 4 a.m. time slot when the leaders in the U.S. were insensitive to where everyone was that would be calling in. And I say insensitive because I believe when those things are scheduled, most people know, or someone tells you, oh, this group of people are going to be talking and it's going to be 2 a.m. And I think sometimes you can't avoid that. So one of the tips I would just say that I learned over time, and I say this to my leaders of all levels all the time, I believe that as a sign of valuing all your people, you need to find a way to rotate all of this so that everyone has an experience having the good times and everyone gets to experience what it's like to have times that aren't maybe in the middle of what we would consider to be a normal work day.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is respectful. It shows that everyone's valued. It ensures, by the way, that no one group of people, you know, get stuck taking something in the middle of the night, taking calls in the middle of the night, and they're not at their best, right? Because chances are, by the way, they've worked a full day and they've right. either gotten up to do this or they're getting up early or they're staying up, et cetera. So we don't necessarily get the best of people either at those times. And so I would say, you know, finding a way, and by the way, some of our clients very purposefully determine the best times when their cross-functional teams can be on calls. I know we've done this with your team. And by the way, we call that the golden hour. So I give that to everyone. You can have them in your organization, take that term and use it. And you say, okay, we've got people in India. We've got people in Singapore. We've got people in the US. We've got people in the UK. We've got people in South America. What are actually those few golden hours where we can get everyone and no one has some horrible time or has to disrupt their sleep or do something? And then you protect those golden hours, right? They become the place where we show that we're respecting and valuing people's contribution, and it becomes a cultural norm in the organization. And by the way, you can do this in small businesses. This isn't magic.
Right,
you don't have
right.
to have a big company to be able to deploy something like this. And the second piece I would just say of that, and unless you want to talk about that, Nick, because I know on your team we did it when you established an office in Serbia.
Yep. Yeah. So we're glad. Like we have an incredible synergistic team because there's this woman called Christine Grimm. I don't know if you heard of her. She did an incredible job to really help us as a team at Life Without Limbs, our nonprofit organization. Just to really synergistically flow. And it's actually been the last 2 years where we would be absolutely allergic to the idea that someone, you know, is not in the office 5 days a week.
Right.
You know, to now where we're at, it's like there's a pretty good percentage that everyone's pretty much at home right now. And it's, you know, it's the new norm. That golden hour is key. And then for me, I'm glad because now I'm in Central Time. So I'm not a morning person, believe it or not. I actually get up, you know, 8 o'clock now. And when I'm at 10 o'clock here, you know, it's 8 o'clock Pacific time. And then there's this beautiful golden hour between, fortunately, Serbia and West Coast. And that's been fun. And I'm also thinking, though, of I also want to unpackage a little later on before we maybe change total lanes. It's as well going back to the cadence of going, like you mentioned, going, coming back to work. Like, for instance, if someone's in California and they just heard that, from what I understand, don't quote me on this, but Los Angeles United School District is not really reopening at all for a while and not in the fall. Let's just say that. So imagine the people who don't test positive for COVID, who can go back to work, but now have kids at home who can't afford the babysitters as well. It's like, you just got to be, remember how you taught our team, I'd like you to talk about this. It's talking about flex, what we just talked about. It's being flexible and flexing, yes, your personality and your disc, or you know, your skills and all that, but really being able to be gracious like never before. But then once it's set, to stick to it, right? And that communicative thing. So you know the golden rules, right? So now it's kind of mush, but now we're coming close to the concrete almost being reset in now the next couple of months. We've had lockdown since March-ish, right? Yeah. So there's got to be a certain time where CEOs now understand, okay, this is the golden hour. This is when we're respectful. This is when everyone can come in and blah, 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 blah. Now let's reset the golden rules. Like how, you know, with that parameter of respecting and everyone's time, how much should we as CEOs kind of have this as mush and grace, mercy before you're like, hey guys, like we're in August, we're in October, we're in December. There are some things, you know, that are going to be continually fluid evolving, but there's got to be a time parameter where a good leader understands, okay, we got to set this time in the next 8 weeks, guys. Let's talk to each other. Let's figure out the golden hours. Let's figure out those ground rules and then reset the ground rules.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, I'm working with a few executive teams, big companies, small companies, around this topic. And what I mean by that is I'm going to give everybody some language. So purposefully redesigning how we work. So instead of our old thinking, which was just a few months ago where we thought, oh, this is temporary, taking this on and saying, hey, if this is going to last 12 months or 24 months, and that's actually great planning, by the way, even if it doesn't last that long, preparing for that is a healthy way to work with your people to find out, you know, for some people, working at home has been very difficult. You know, you as a leader should know who that is and how it impacts their productivity. If you don't already know, I know some organizations' leaders were very surprised and unhappy, sad to find out that people had untenable situations in their homes because not everybody has a home office and not everybody had Wi-Fi and not everyone had the right devices. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of obstacles that are very real for people. So one, I would say leaders find out, you know, what truly doesn't work for someone if this was a long-term situation and how can you address that proactively and appropriately so that their productivity levels, but also their mental health and physical health are protected and this is sustainable for them. I would say to your point, Nick, also having a conversation with a very large part of the population, whether it be a woman or a man who is responsible for young children, who will be going to school at home again. That was really hard for everybody the last few months, which was the end of the school year here in the US. And I know it was a little different for other places and countries because I have friends and colleagues that had kind of different versions of this. But I think that for any adult who has to work at the same time that they have, specifically, like I said, younger children who have to homeschool, when you didn't choose that, right? There are people who are really good at it because they purposefully chose homeschooling. Now we have a lot of people who are kind of being thrust into that world. So it's not necessarily convenient for them. It's extra stress. It definitely makes it so that you're trying to do too many things at one time and try to control a lot of dynamics without being interrupted. That's almost impossible. So I would say the leaders should definitely know who on their teams have that as a reality. As they move forward and how does that impact and impede their ability to do their job. We can't ignore it. I wouldn't wait until there's a crisis. I really hope that that's a proactive conversation and then determine if policy is necessary. That's one of the things I've been working with leaders on is really sitting back and saying, you know, do we create temporary policy? You know, they want to be fair. They also need to keep their business going. So all of that needs to be I believe, if it's not already for you, anyone here who's listening, that you need to have that conversation soon. And from a standpoint of, you know, your people in most businesses, the people are actually, you know, making the business work. That's who does the work, right? We have process and we have technology, but we have a lot of people doing things. So we want to make sure that the people have the right infrastructure, policy, et cetera, to help them feel good about work. And I will leave that last thing and say, Nick, that I do believe that I hope that a gift that we have from this whole experience is starting to understand that we are all global citizens. And there's no better way to learn that than being in an organization that crosses geographic boundaries. And then starting to have a deep understanding of the cultures that your people are living in and having empathy for the way that different cultures and geographies and groups of people are dealing with the situations that we have and how is that impacting them for real? You know what I mean? Like what is happening and not taking what I call the peanut butter spread approach to anything. I would say, hopefully leaders, if you haven't learned it yet, to realize one size doesn't fit all. And right now you need to spend the time, even though it might feel complicated, to figure out what really works for each group of people that you employ.
Yeah. I love that. And for me personally, because I have friends in dozens of countries, I've actually learned that you're able to transparently have a conversation sometimes that you, because it's not face-to-face, and even if you don't do like a video call, you know, to text your directors and say, hey, great call, or wait the next day, hey, great call yesterday. How are you doing? How are you feeling? Just those couple questions, I feel like it helps people sometimes actually open up more because of the society that we're in text. And it's just good to get a pulse on things. I know a state legislature, I was talking in front of the state legislature of Hawaii about bullying, and they tried this app thing where, you know, every week they do like this 1 to 10, 5 questions or 3 questions. How are you feeling on this? And what's your emotional level on this? Are you happy? Are you this? Are academics and family? It's almost like, especially for your directors, we're, as you know, we're privileged in a way in our nonprofit organization that the team has decided that every morning they do a half hour devotional, spiritual, opening up of their hearts, their minds, reading a book together. That's where they get to talk to each other. That has not stopped one bit. It's gone virtual. And so having that cadence is amazing. And it helps the CEO or COO really have an antenna, but it's one thing to have in a group session, but really the one-on-one, especially for those directors, say, hey, offline, off work, how are you doing? And you could just see, hey, sometimes it's just good to feel like someone actually cares. Because it's one thing to say, yeah, look, well, I don't want to bother the CEO because he's got a lot on his plate right now, mm-hmm. right? But yet at the same time, if we lose that pulse that we once had, then you lose productivity and you lose the sense of leadership, which is most important than anything, of the respect that you can have from the team and that mutual respect on that, because how you lead will either help you succeed or bleed. I just came up with that.
You just made that up.
I did. Did you like that?
I'm trying to decide. I don't like
how you lead. What did I say?
Something about bleeding.
How you lead will determine if you succeed or bleed. I don't know. Something.
There you go. That. Yeah, I'm still digesting it. You're probably right. I think
how you lead will determine how you succeed or if you bleed.
That is true.
Yeah.
Look, something you just said kind of triggered a little thing for me, and I think that it's important. So one, I'm an advocate for one-on-ones, connections. I think that before COVID, what I remember It's a long time now. But I'm talking to a lot of leaders about this on a regular basis, which is a lot of us were super distracted before this.
Yeah.
Right? Sitting still didn't happen often for many of us, myself included. I facilitated a lot of meetings when I wasn't doing one-on-one coaching, as you know, in person, and lots of airplanes, lots of airports, lots of activity all the time. And a lot of that has gone away. Whether it comes back or not, I kind of don't care anymore. I'm more looking at like, okay, what does quality interaction mean now? And I would say to you, whether you have a global team or not, to all leaders, quality time with people, whether it's 1 minute or an hour, whatever it is, matters. Ensuring that even if you're uncomfortable asking personal questions, that you do connect with the person as a human first before jumping in. I think that everyone would agree, there's articles all over the internet about it, that people are feeling isolated, even if they're not in a home alone. They're definitely missing the interaction of whether it's people at work or the social engagement you had just by going out and going to a restaurant or shopping. And I think this is global, by the way. This is not, this isn't just where we are. So all of these connections that we are used to having with each other, well, they mattered. They were doing probably more than we realized. And so recreating those moments with touch points, and whether they're with technology, Nick, like you said, with text messages or something, I would just say increase the frequency of connection with people. And then if you are significantly in a different time zone with people and there's significant gap in time zone or geography or culture, then I would say, you know, really take the time to, you know, find out like what is their experience. Don't assume that the experience is the same as you. In fact, I go into every conversation now. At first, by the way, I felt a lot of affinity because everybody seemed to be having a lot of the same conversations. Oh my gosh, I'm tired of Zoom or whatever. Like those were kind of the things we had in common.
Uh-huh.
Now I'm trying to find the things that I don't have in common with people.
Wow.
Right. So I'm sitting and having conversations and assuming I don't know. So just because I saw something on the news or whatever, I'm not using that as my reference point. I'm going to let the person tell me the story. And by the way, I think that does a lot for all of us because we need to really, truly understand to have empathy. And I know you do the same. I know that you spend a lot of time, you know, something you brought up in another podcast was that you watch the world news.
Right.
And for someone who's managing a team that is a global team, that should be playbook.
Right. I never thought of it that way. I'm just sick of the fluff and the stuff. So yeah, but in that as well, like I love that. I love that you bring that in as a reference point. And that's why I really appreciate you when you've been coaching me. I know you have reference points in the back of your head, but I've actually never, now that you even bring it up, not once have you come in and actually made me feel like there's a reference point. I'm going to make you laugh because I'm not going to mention who I'm talking about, but it's almost as if there is someone that's in my life that you already know they got a reference point. They already know everything going on. And then they come in and they're like, and you know what they want, you know what they're going to say, and they already know what you're going to say.
Right.
And that sucks. It sucks. What I love about you is when you, even if you did have a reference point, which I'm sure you had, because you have conversations with other members on my team at times, you don't at all come across it as that. You actually come open-handed, open ear, and you listen. And it's really interesting because, you know, when someone's talking to you, one of the things that you've helped me to understand is when you're listening, you look them in the eye. And I can't though look you in the eye then look you in the eye there, you know, on Zoom, which is really funny. I wonder if that, you know, ever like, because now I'm looking at you, but now I'm not looking at you, got to be.
Right.
It's the new thing. It's
I have
like,
the same
what?
Problem. I have a Zoom problem. Like, where do I look?
Funny. We're going to need anyway. I'm not going to try and make another funny joke. But anyway, with you coming in and listening and getting the context, I think context is everything. And you coaching me to also be a coach for other CEOs is one of the biggest things. It's just, you got to listen and let them tell you their story. And one of the other things that I learned is when I'm telling you something or sharing with you something, it's not even that I'm even needing so much of a sympathy as much as it's me listening to myself and then hearing the story that I think I'm telling myself out loud has been one of the greatest pivoting points in leadership of my life when I met you. So just hearing yourself as well and being heard, that again and again is so holistic with this right now too.
It is. Look, it's really good advice. I know you were just kind of referencing our experience together, but I would say to everybody here, you know, don't discount how important it is for you to play the role that Nick just talked about, me playing that role for him. And I do this professionally, but that doesn't mean you can't do it, right? So listening to people right now is super important and highly valuable. Don't discount it because people, like I said, they feel isolated, but also, right, this is such unfamiliar territory. And we've talked before, but I'll say it again, because it's worth it if you've never listened to any of the rest of our podcasts. We have spent some time, a few times, talking about the relevancy of fear and uncertainty. And when people get caught in that thinking, and right now we have a lot of people around the world who have a lot of uncertainty. And Nick, like you said, you know, when you told me before we got on camera, you know, that in what, 50 minutes, you got 1700 responses to your question on Facebook Live and started reading some of them to me. I thought, yeah, I don't spend enough time probably thinking about all the people around the world who have somebody in ICU or have lost their job or are afraid that they're going to lose their job. And I don't want to perseverate on that. There's a big word for us. But what I do want to say to all of you is spending the time listening to people to understand the situation they're in is important because that does actually help them get calm, knowing that someone's listening. And you said it, Nick, it helps people clarify. You know, a lot of people aren't really talking to the people they're talking to. They are talking to themselves. Just FYI, you might want to know that about yourself, but not you, Nick, but everybody listening, like really pay attention to when you're processing things out loud, you're really just making sense of them sometimes for yourself. And so it's helpful, right? Like, so you're learning and they might actually be clarifying and learning so that they can move forward in a big way. And we need everybody to move forward in a big way right now.
By the way, I have a confession. I didn't get my whiteboard yet. I am going to get them up though real soon, I promise. And in that, I also feel like on this level, in fact, we got to go back to our team and internalize and maybe have a pulse check. I feel like it's a good time for, even though we feel like we're a well-oiled machine, I'm going to be taking some time myself just to see how is everyone doing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of nonprofits out there, let's just say this, nonprofits have now have felt a pinch. Mm-hmm. In the last 60 days, that's for sure. And in all of this going on, and such high reports of unemployment in America and even higher in developing countries, and then also or less developed countries, and then even the effects of this moving forward. Like, imagine from a global perspective for a second. If you only focused on America and you knew that most of the work was contracting people outside of the country, for whatever reasons within the variables of COVID itself, how does that affect everyone? Because in, let's say, big companies in America that have a call service center in a poorer country who can't go into a call service center anymore, who can't take the calls from home, who don't have internet, who don't have a laptop, I mean, we're talking about some big shifts and big changes in emerging markets, really, that now have been capped and then, like a pancake, gone back to the floor, in my opinion, in the next 6 months. That in itself, on a big scale, I mean, it's scary for many companies, I think, overseas especially. Mm-hmm. And just many changes that we can't even anticipate today that I think it's going to take some time to only look back and say, oh, okay, we didn't see that coming. Yet not living there and living in fear, sticking on today, sticking on what we can do and do it to the best of our ability. As we're wrapping up this episode, what are the three things that you would like to leave for leaders, on the context of this? You've said some amazing practical steps. We talked about the golden hour. We talked about making sure that your team's doing okay. You're talking about understanding the needs and desires, if you will, from people who are now working from home, who now have other needs around them, which could also change really rapidly if schools aren't opening. The list goes on. Mm-hmm. In this very uncertain, if you will, month, but I think it's the month where it's almost like, to me, this is my opinion, we didn't talk about this before, I think by September, we're really going to know, I think, what a six-month runway looks like. And whether or not that happens, I fully agree with you. If any CEOs or any leaders are thinking that it's going back, they're going to backpedal on any success that they've done. And we need to bank on the fact that now this is the new norm. And even if it goes back somehow, get ready for that. And you can always pivot therein, but preparing for the worst and this being new norm without anyone dropping off because of a lack of leadership, because of a lack of listening, because of a lack of care, if you will, on that. What would you leave, three key or golden nuggets for someone listening right now?
Yep. So first thing, I challenge all the leaders out there. And if you're not a leader and you know a leader, which I'm sure you might, I would suggest, or let's only say it's a challenge, please do it, to on your town hall meetings or all employee meetings, start allowing your employees, no matter what level they are, where they are geographically, to spend 5-10 minutes telling their story. It's very powerful. And it's just storytelling, but your people can get to know the other people on your team and you can learn a lot that way. So some storytelling right now will really get you a lot of great energy and knowledge about your people. So that's one thing. The second thing I would say is, if you haven't already figured it out, the human aspect of your business beyond human resources, the way we've thought about it in the past, needs to get to the next level. Like wellness, before most companies, invested in wellness, and that was snacks in the break room and yoga, and we'll give you a discount on your gym membership, at least here in the US and some other places where big companies were running the program. That's fantastic. I think we're beyond that now. We really have to take into consideration that resilience now and wellness includes people's mental health. And because we have so many people who are either working from home, or like you said, Nick, the way they work is being impacted. I know this sounds obvious to people, but it really isn't if you dig down and start to understand how much people's mental health and their experience in work and anxiety and uncertainty, how much that really, really impacts their resilience. And what I mean by that is the ability for people to recover from conflict, the ability to deal with their emotions. And, you wonder why all of a sudden people are getting angry faster, seem more frustrated, their body language might be bad, whatever it is. We need to pay attention to that. We got humans, we got to take care of the humans. And now we've got new challenges in taking care of our humans. So maybe I just leave it there. Those are two big ones.
I love it, Chris. You're golden. You're awesome. Love you.
Love you too.
Thanks so much for this week. Really appreciate it. I am so looking forward. We had a pre-production phone call with
Regina Ellis. Yeah, from the Cancer Association. She's amazing. She's amazing. I can't wait for that episode. Yeah, it's gonna be great.
Say that again. Tell her. Say the foundation again, because I interrupted. Go for it.
Yep, it's Children's Cancer Association. We can put the link in later when we talk to Regina. She's amazing. She founded that organization, and they are talk about some new challenges in the situation now, helping families and sick kids in the U.S. mainly, but globally they impact the way that is happening. And of course, that has completely changed with COVID. And limited some of the services that can come into hospitals, obviously, because of the people not being able to go in there. So yeah, I can't wait for that episode. It's going to be fantastic.
It's going to be awesome. We're going to be recording that soon, and that'll be up in a couple weeks. But we're going to be also talking about next week. Make sure that you join us next week, please. Me and Chris, we're going to be getting into the story that we tell ourselves, self-deception, the disability of it, the poison of it, and to know when you have it or not. How do we get the antibody of self-deception? Please join us next week on the Leadership Now series with Nick and Chris. Love you. Have a great week. God bless.
Hey guys, thank you so much for listening. Help us reach as many people as possible by giving us a rating, a review, and subscribing to this podcast. Love you so much. And remember, share this with anyone you know who needs to hear this as well. I'll see you next week.